I'm Florence Weiss, and I'll be bringing you in and around each week at this time. We'll be interviewing prominent people from all walks of life. My guest tonight is someone who deals daily with the controversial. Now it's his turn to face the questions. I'd like to welcome Mr. Tom Snyder, host of KYW's Contact, to my show. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Florence. How are you tonight?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
First of all, I'd like to find out a little bit about your background. Where did you go to college?
I won't tell you that, Florence.
Thank you.
I'm only kidding, of course. I went to Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is a Jesuit school and which supposedly offers a fine liberal education in journalism and the arts and speech and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. What kind of degree did you graduate with?
Well, I graduated with a plain old Bachelor of Science in journalism with a minor in speech.
I'd like to ask you something about that. Now, I've been told different things about what I should major in because I'm interested in this field. Some people have told me it would be better for me to take liberal arts over a communications course or a journalism course. Which did you think would be better?
I think that's probably pretty sound advice for this reason. The people who teach journalism at Marquette, I don't know about Temple because I've never gone to J school here, but the people who teach journalism by and large are those people who have been in the academic community all of their lives.
Well, I know here at Temple we have teachers who have been in the field. A lot of our communications teachers were professional announcers or newscasters, and a lot of them have worked for local newspapers. So in a case like that where they're actual professionals, would you think it would be better for us to take
that?
Yeah,
if they're current professionals, but are they guys who maybe have worked in the field up to a point, say 1955 or 56? If they're those kind of people, then they might be teaching you 1955 or 1956 techniques.
A couple of them are doing current work on other stations, so I was just, thank you. Now what about, after you graduated college, where'd you go from there?
Well, I opened a copy of a magazine called Broadcasting. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard of that. It's a trade publication, and in the back of that publication there are ads for jobs.
Yes.
And I sent out about 50 or 60 letters, and I got one back, and it offered me a job in Savannah, Georgia, and that's the one I took. It wasn't the best job in the world, but looking back on it, it was good experience, because in a smaller market like that, you're able to do all sorts of things that you can't do here because of unions.
Yes.
And you learn the whole business from top to bottom.
Was that a local or a network?
A local station. Mm-hmm. Very, very small station.
And where did you go from there, then?
And then I moved up to Atlanta, Georgia. I shouldn't say moved up, really. I moved up in terms of geography. It's 300 miles north from Savannah to Atlanta. I went there for a couple of years. Then I went out to Los Angeles for a couple of years, and now I'm here for a couple of years. You wonder why I move around so much with my act, Florence? You have to keep moving.
Same with you. I read somewhere about when you were in L.A. that you received an Emmy Award. We were part of a team or something that won an Emmy Award.
Well, that's the more proper way I like to look upon it, as my own Emmy Award, but it really isn't. It belongs to a lot of people. Back in December of 1963, they had what is referred to in Los Angeles as the Baldwin Hills Dam disaster, in which a water reservoir up in the mountains bust loose one afternoon and killed six or seven people and wiped away 40 or 50 houses. And the station for which I worked at that time did a very fine job of covering it with live cameras and helicopters and things of that nature, and the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, which is a phony organization, gave us a very phony award called an Emmy. And because it looks good on resumes, I put it down on that sheet that
Notice
I gave you
that,
this
yes.
afternoon. Right.
As far as there are many questions that I'd like to ask you about your show, Contact, what would be the purpose of Contact with the people calling in?
Well, the purpose of Contact really is to fill an hour of television time from 9 to 10 o'clock in the morning.
Instead
That's
of the reruns.
Why do we have the telephones, I suppose, is the first part of the question. We have the telephones because for some reason people will watch a program that they can become involved in. And by being able to pick up a telephone and talk with the President of the United States, if we'd ever get him on, or Senator Joe Clark, who we have had on, there is some kind of a bond there that would make a person watch that program if he or she were able to call up somebody and say, well, look, I read about your thing in the newspapers, and I hate the way you talk, and I want to tell you something right now, etc., etc. So that's one of the big reasons we have the telephones. Another reason is that I don't care who does this kind of a show, whether it's Tom Snyder or Joe Phipps or Florence Weiss or whoever it is. No one person can know all the questions. So if you have all kinds of people calling in, you get a much broader view. You let people ask the questions that are on their minds rather than having a news guy like myself or a talk guy like David Susskind asking the questions, and that's it. It broadens the point of view, and for that reason we think the telephones are a pretty good idea.
Well, how much boning up do you have to do before each show?
Well, I suppose you could spend 2 days boning up for each one. I spend about 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. And if it's like an author, you have to usually read the book beforehand, or
maybe the first chapter, the middle chapter, and the last chapter. I have a theory on reading a book by somebody who's going to appear on the show. I don't think that's too good a method of preparation, because if I'm having a guy on, I don't much care what he's got to say. He's going to say that on the program anyway, so why should I bore myself for 24 hours all night long reading his book to find out what he's going to say tomorrow morning? I know what he's going to say because he's going to tell me all the things that are in that book. I would much rather have the people that do research for us get opposing points of view so that I can go in there armed with the questions that all the people who are against this man might want to ask.
So you'll have both sides of it?
Right.
Okay. How do you handle unruly guests? There have been times where a guest will do something, or even a caller. How are you able to handle
that? Well, we really haven't had any unruly people on, I don't think, for a long time. I guess the guy that was the unruliest was the first fellow that we ever had on, Mark Lane, who did that book on the assassination. And those kinds of guests, you have to be terribly well armed with facts, because when they make a statement of some kind, you have to be able to refute it in truth or in fact. So far as unruly telephone calls, that's a rather easy thing to do. You just cut them off. They pull out the plug. We had a fella come on the other morning and say, well, there is a heck of a lot of things that you don't know, Snyder, and he didn't use the word heck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they pulled him off, but as they were pulling him off, I simply tell those people, look, you know, we're on the air, and if you don't want to behave, we're going to knock you off. And in his case, I said, be sure never to call back, because if you do, we're not going to answer the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about all you can do.
And have you ever found any of your preconceived notions being changed? You know, you might go into a show
Never.
With a certain... No, not yet.
Never.
Are you able to keep in your thoughts, your prejudices, out of when you're interviewing a guest?
Of course not. I try to. I think it's the business of every good television news reporter or commentator or whatever you want to call them to keep his or her opinions out. But you can't do that all the time.
Yeah.
I can't do it all the time. I try very hard.
How much leeway has KYW given you in expressing your thoughts? Because I think it's... Bob Menifee, I think, from CAU, he's given more or less a clear chance. He can say or do almost anything he wants on the air. But most of the other people, it's like self-built censorship. They have to worry about what they get.
I really don't worry about that too much. Since the first day this thing went on, the instructions that all of us got who work on this program on Channel 3, now this, of course, is we're talking about the contact program and not the news programs.
Mm-hmm.
News programs are a horse of another color. But we have almost unlimited freedom, I think, to say or do almost anything we want to do, with the limitation that you don't lose the license, which is granted to the station by the FCC. You don't go on there and be obscene. You don't go on there and advocate the overthrow of the government by force or those kinds of things that nobody wants to do anyway. We have a great deal of freedom there. In fact, there isn't one single instance that I can think of when my boss has called me up after the show and said, look, I don't think you should have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was another instance when we had booked Dr. Timothy Leary to be on that program back in December. And the general manager of the television station, 3 days before Leary was to come on, sent down a memo and said he is not going to appear, period. And all of us asked questions of our management at that time, why not let him on? He represents a point of view. LSD is certainly a controversial subject. Why shouldn't we put him on? The answer we got was this. If we put a man like Leary on for an hour and let him advocate the use of LSD by those people
mm-hmm.
who want to use it, it may result in some people doing some very strange things that could get them into a lot of trouble. I happen to think that that was the wrong point of view. But it's his television station, and I work for him.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as he comes around beforehand and says, look, I don't want you to put this guy on, I'm not going to put him on.
I see, because I guess in that case, they fear the power of the suggestion of Leary, because he is supposed to be a powerful talker.
Right, Leary or a fellow like George Lincoln Rockwell, the mm-hmm. Nazi. You wouldn't put him on under any circumstances, because he produces violent reactions in the community, which could lead to a lot of problems. You have people marching around, breaking windows, getting upset. Terrible emotional thrill attached to this man, and it's just not good policy, I don't think, to put an irresponsible fellow like him on. Now, I don't think Leary was the same way. I think we should have put Leary on,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't.
To have people meet, maybe it be something for the people to be able to actually see him. They hear so much about him, and you don't actually hear him being interviewed too often.
Florence, there are a lot of people who think that LSD is, you know, some kind of a traffic regulation. They don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be interesting to have this man come on and take a pot shot at him or two. Well, we weren't able to do that. I'm sorry we weren't able to do that, but we just couldn't do it because the people that run that television station said, no, you can't.
Yeah.
And after all, it's their television station, Florence.
You've been approached, or you talk about it many times now, I've noticed, the thought of a nighttime contact. Is there any chance of that coming out in primetime? You're doing reruns now at 1 o'clock in the morning, but as far as an actual primetime, nighttime contact, preempting maybe network shows, is there any chance of that?
Not a chance. A local station, as I'm sure you know, can't simply call up the network and say, look, we're not going to carry your programming from 8:30 until 9:30, mm-hmm. Monday through Friday. If that happens, very shortly, Channel 17 will have the NBC affiliation in Philadelphia. We don't want that to happen. Mm-hmm. Not because we think less of Channel 17, but because the NBC television network forms a great basis of our programming at Channel 3. So it's not going to be on in prime time between the hours of 7 o'clock or 7:30 at night, mm-hmm. and 11 o'clock at night. We have had a lot of people call in, write in. I say a lot, a couple of hundred, that's a lot in our business.
Yes, for local.
They say, why aren't you on at night? Well, the answer is really very simple. The network, for one thing, and then they say, well, what about 1 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, which I...
Well, I can't stay up that late 5 nights a week.
I don't think you're going to have that big an audience either at that
and
hour.
And you've hit it right on the head. You will get all of the people that stay up between 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, but you'll never get another soul.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas from 9 to 10 o'clock in the morning, we've got a pop at getting some people on there who may never have watched television from 9 to 10 o'clock in the morning.
Because those network reruns, that's when they usually stick them in.
That's
but
right.
Are you afraid of just getting the housewives view from 9 to 10? There's not
What's
too many
What's wrong with
people.
Housewives?
Yeah, well, you're not getting the
They're
milk
starving out
you.
There. You'd be surprised how many housewives, and I hate to use that term, how many ladies write in and say, you know, thank God you put this program mm-hmm. on. We've got something else besides Pixan over there at Channel 10 and her dreadful reruns of cartoons and Girl Talk, that phony program that Virginia Graham does up in New York with that awful local cut-in from 9:30 to 9:45 mm-hmm. with that gal that used to do a kids program that was
yes.
equally as bad as the program she's doing now. So we have a lot of women write in and say, gee, you know, thank goodness you put that program on. On the other hand, we get letters from some ladies who say, well, why can't we have PDQ and Bachelor Father
yes.
back? And if things keep going the way they have been,
they
might get PDQ and Bachelor Father back. Right?
What about the men, though? Do you find many men calling in at that
sure,
time?
Sure, you'd be surprised. I'm not saying that we get 50% every morning, but some mornings, this morning, for example, we had three fellas call up.
Mm-hmm.
One morning last week, nearly all of our calls were fellas calling up. I like to think that there are a lot of fellas who work in business who might have a television set in their office, Florence, and they might turn it on from 9 to 10, or might catch it from 9:30 to 10, or don't leave until 20
mm-hmm.
after or 25 after, and will become so provoked by what we're doing there in the morning, they might hang around for the whole hour once or twice a week. Who
mm-hmm.
knows?
As far as radio goes, do you still do any radio work at all with Contact?
Yes, we do, although on a very limited basis. Our radio station, as you know, operates all news 24 hours a day. Some
mm-hmm.
people say all snooze 24 hours a day. Anyway, I usually take the guy that we have on that morning or the guest that
mm-hmm.
morning down to the radio studio, and we tape a thing such as you and I are doing right now. Or is it you and me are doing? Anyway,
English.
We both tape a thing, and then they break it up into little chunks and play it throughout the day as kind of a feature thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what kind of response they've had to it, but the people that run the radio station say it's terrific, and as long as they keep saying
that's
that,
it.
Florence, I'm going to keep on doing
that's
it.
That's what you have to worry about. I'm Florence Weiss, and my guest tonight is Mr. Tom Snyder, host of KYW's Contact. Do you prefer the contact situation where you're asking the guests questions, or do you prefer straight reporting, which you're doing a little bit more lately now, like on the 6 o'clock news, or do you prefer the documentaries? You just did it. The documentary was very well received on Noise. Now, do you prefer that?
Gee, you know, that's like asking somebody if they'd like to drive a Cadillac, a Thunderbird, or a Lincoln
well,
Continental.
Or have a favorite.
I suppose, you know, I have come a long way, I guess, from covering cops and robbers. In fact, my industry has come a long way
mm-hmm.
from chasing ambulances in this matter of television news. I think that we ought to do more in television news, and because I think that I have some ideas to contribute in that area, I would like to do more of it. I'm not satisfied to simply take a television camera, or let me talk for the whole broadcast industry here,
mm-hmm.
a radio microphone down to the mayor's news conference, and accept carte blanche all of the things that he says regarding what's going on in the city of Philadelphia. I think it's high time that all of us in these media, radio and television, begin asking darn tough questions of the people who run our public agencies for us.
Mm.
I think the poverty program here in Philadelphia is a good case in point.
Yeah.
Charlie Bowser has made some terrible mistakes in that area, yet time after time after time, we'll go down there and take the press release, pick it up, look at it, and say,
just...
oh, Charles Bowser today said, and put it on the
mm-hmm.
air and give this guy a platform. Not that he isn't an altogether conscientious man in some areas, but I think we have a responsibility at times to point out to the best of our ability, where a public agency is going astray or where they are misleading the public,
mm-hmm.
and we don't do enough of that. So I would like to make more of a contribution in that area. I enjoy the Contact program very, very much because it's kind of like a graduate degree course for
mm-hmm.
me. I'm exposed, as are all the people who work for us, to a great variety of opinion and some new ideas, and it's rather interesting. So far as documentaries are concerned, I think television documentaries are, for the most part, a waste of time.
Well, your show really seems to have evoked a lot of response. I don't know whether it'll do any good or anything.
Well, that's it. What did that show on Noise say? It was a good little show for what it was. It was clean. It was slick. I mean, all the pictures matched all the things that people were saying. But when we got all through with it, what did it say about noise? What did it contribute to the thinking of people in getting rid of this terrible racket that we're creating around Philadelphia and its cities all across
America? They were more concerned, I think, with the show than they were with the foot.
And I don't want you to think I'm just picking on our show on noise, because I watched one on Channel 12, the educational station, the other night on what happened up there, which was the thing about the Japanese airline disaster back in February at the Tokyo airport.
Mm-hmm.
The title of the program was What Happened Up There. You would think that this program would assemble all of the facts that were available and tell you what happened that made a 727 go in Tokyo Bay and kill 133 people. Florence, the whole program was over, and they wound up by saying, what happened up there? You know, I can sit down and play a guitar for an hour and open it up and say, what happened up there, and play 20 songs and close and say, well, what did happen up there? I think those documentaries should answer those questions, or they ought to keep them off the air.
Mm-hmm.
So there ought to be some improvement there, too.
You're an outspoken person, as witnessed by so far. Now, I'd like to get your opinions of many things that you've discussed on Contact already. First and foremost, and I have to admit that I am prejudiced, you've discussed many times women working, etc., and you get many calls about that.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I just sound off on it a little bit?
Sure. Ask me some questions about it, Florence. Be specific.
Okay, about women working. Now, do you think they should... I know you said something to the fact that women should, if they're going to work... they should work and be happy about it, not complain about it.
That's right. You know, Florence, they say a lot of things about the United States of America, but it's one of the few countries, I guess, going where everybody, theoretically, has the right of free choice. Now, one morning, a lady called up and she said, gee, I'm married to this guy and I got three kids, or I've got two kids, and I'm so upset. I sit home. All I do is change diapers all day long. There's no glamour in my life, and I used to have such a wonderful job, and now I'm terribly upset. And I said, tell me about the wonderful job. She said, well, I used to work at an automobile agency filling out invoices, and it was so exciting. I thought to myself, you know, here is a lady that has obviously got a big mental problem. I can't see anything glamorous about filling out invoices in a truck company. I said, you know, ma'am, you chose, back when the guy says, will you or won't you, for better or for worse, rich or for poor, and all those wonderful words, I said, you made a choice, didn't you? She said, yes, I did. I said, if you wanted to work in the truck agency all your life, then you shouldn't have gotten married. I have nothing against women working, women being in politics, women being in television, but for heaven's sake, when you do that, then don't start complaining about it. Just like I have nothing against women being married and having kids, or fellas being married and fathering children, but don't complain about it. Do something about it. We've got to become more doers than just complainers.
But then do you agree with the people that who call in and say, there's so many people who have called into you and they've said, I agree with you about women, but their point is that they're taking jobs away from men and that they shouldn't do it.
Florence, I could open the evening bulletin from last night or tonight and find five columns of jobs for men and five columns of jobs for women and five columns of jobs for both sexes. I am not one bit worried about a gal taking my job away, and I'm sure all the gals that work at KYW are not worried about me taking their job away.
So you really, the only thing you have against them is their complaining, but not so much about the fact that they are out working.
That's right. And, of course, I would say there are some women in our society, Florence, who have a rather inflated sense of their own self-importance. I think those women sometimes think that they are able to master everything within their command, and they simply can't, and when they try and put one over on me, I get very upset.
Okay, I'm going to be careful from that one.
I don't know you that well, Florence.
Okay. About Vietnam, you've had a woman on your show not too long ago. She was one of the four housewives who went to North Vietnam and came back, and she felt from spending, I don't know, what was it, maybe not even a week, I forget how long she spent, 11 days in Vietnam, that she was equipped to... make a peace treaty, and she was going to tell everything that was wrong with it.
Yeah, she's a Secretary of State now, 11 days.
Well, who was it? Somebody said we have 180 billion Secretary of States running around.
Well, I said that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm quoting a good source.
Let me tell you a funny story on that. You know, I can stand up and raise my hand here in the studio and say, gee, I went to Vietnam. I went over there with Governor Scranton as a reporter a year ago. Well, when I came back, all the civic organizations called up the office, and they said, listen, this guy Snyder's been over to Vietnam. We've got to get him over here to make a speech and tell us what he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who goes over there for 7 days or 11 days or 2 weeks and comes back and says he or she is an expert on the war over there is crazy. They're kidding themselves and they're kidding you and me. I'm not an expert for going over there for 5 days, and she isn't either. She saw what they wanted her to see.
That's it. She was so convinced that they were showing her everything, and as far as those prisoners go, that's the way they were really being treated.
I am sure that she was given a marvelous tour and that she was shown some terrible things over there. You know, war is not a game of hopscotch.
Mm-hmm.
When you drop a bomb, it blows up the countryside.
She talked all about the villagers there, that they were all prepared to fight till the end or something for their
just
village.
As when I went to South Vietnam, I'm sure that Governor Scranton was shown those things that they wanted him to see. I don't think that she accepted it in that context. She thought that this was the Ten Commandments written on a piece of stone and given to her by Ho Chi Minh, and she came back thinking that if we did all the things he said, we could solve the war in
Vietnam. In other words, she really believed exactly what
absolutely.
Was, you know, it was a firm belief.
Absolutely. I don't think she's trying to deceive the public, but I think she has deceived herself.
Speaking about Vietnam, just for a minute, do you think there has been an awful lot of censorship of the press? Like when you went over there and what you saw, did it differ greatly from what we were being told back here?
I don't know. As I say, I was there for 5 or 6 days. We weren't censored because we were with an official party being given an official tour, so I'm sure they wanted us to make as many pictures of that as we could. But I've never been a correspondent there, and I really couldn't answer that question because I don't know.
What about Jean Dixon? Now, she was on your show not too long ago, and whenever she goes on anywhere, you'll see letters being written in the paper, and you know, I read her column before New Year's and everything. So what about her?
Well, no single show that we have done has produced more male response from viewers than Jean Dixon. Boy, we've gotten letters about this lady. They accept her as God's daughter.
Yeah, they really is.
And it's very difficult to go on with Jean Dixon and call her a charlatan because she says that this gift of prophecy, to use her term, was given to her by the good Lord, and it's kind of hard for us to go on the air and knock the good Lord. But I'm a little skeptical of her. Because when we had her on, she didn't make one single new prediction.
She just said, keep looking in my book or something.
Keep reading my book or keep reading Ruth Montgomery's column. Now, I'm sure that Ruth Montgomery is a very fine writer. I don't know how much she paid Mrs. Dixon to make those predictions to her exclusively, if she paid anything at all. But I think if Jean Dixon were really and truly a foreseer of the future, and I asked her an honest question such as, are we going to end the war in Vietnam in May? If she were an honest foreseer, she would say yes or no, not read my column written by Ruth Montgomery on January 1st, 1968. Come on, Jean, who are you kidding?
She kept talking about, I think it was a sixth column or something, taking over the country.
Well, I'll lay one on you. I could say, look out for the eighth column, and then if I never explain it, you can walk away saying, gee, maybe we ought to look out for the eighth
Find
column.
Find out what it is first, because she never really explained it.
Let's just say that I'm very skeptical of Jean Dixon.
You had somebody on your New Year's Eve contact, I believe, who also made predictions, didn't he?
David Hoy?
I think so.
Well, it's a funny thing about David Hoy. I don't think he'd mind if I simply said that David Hoy is more of a magician than he is a mentalist. He's able to do some darn good mental tricks and bill them as extrasensory perception or ESP or predicting. And Florence, I could sit here and say to you that there's going to be a terrible airplane crash that's going to kill some people in the next 6 months, and the chances are 99 out of 100 that I'm going to be right. I think he does this, and then he adds to it all of the mental tricks that he knows, and he comes up with a pretty good act, and that's exactly
but
what it is.
But his is admittedly an act, whereas hers...
Well, I don't know if he would come right out and admit it, but he never really comes out and says, look, it's ESP. He is more concerned with doing all of those things than telling you what ESP is. So I surmise it to be a darn good act.
You've had Bill Dozier on your show, and one of the commissioners from the FCC. What is your opinion of television this season?
I think it stinks, Florence.
What in specific? I know that's what Bill Dozier came on and he spoke eloquently about his role. He sort of tossed aside Batman, although he said it has its place, and then the Green Hornet and
ones. I have to agree with him when he says that for what it is, Batman is a very well-done
Batman,
show.
But not all the imitations now of Batman. I mean, that's television this season. It seems to be all copies of shows that were on last season.
He made a very true statement. Television is designed for one purpose, so far as those of us who work in the industry are concerned, and that is to sell things. Batman sells things. The Green Hornet is going to sell things. All these other imitations are going to sell things. And they will fill the pipelines up with those programs as long as the people watch them. And he makes a very telling point when he talked about Dennis the Menace being up against the show with
the Hamlet show
with Maurice Evans. Dennis the Menace killed Hamlet. You know, Hamlet didn't have to kill himself. Jay North did it for him. All these people that call up and say, give us more culture on television, they're kidding themselves because these people are a very small minority. They watch it. Nobody else watches it. and of a consequence you have these mediocre programs coming on. The Bachelor's Daughter and The Farmer and the Dell and the Beverly Hillbillies and all this junk that's
on today.
They seem to
they're going to go on forever because whoever... They're the ones being renewed. As soon as you're, like, with the Stage 67, now they're more or less letting that go easy. They're shortening it to once a month or something, whatever.
Yeah, because
it was
a bomb. Because it didn't make it, Florence. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible, terrible show. It did not live up to its promise. Sometimes I think that those people who work in this business that try to be so creative are really kidding themselves, too. I sometimes wonder if this whole business of television or radio was ever intended to be an intellectual exercise.
Mm-hmm. Supposedly for the mass or something.
After all, what is a television set in a house? You go and you turn it on and you sit down in front of it and you watch it. You watch it for about 10 minutes and then you get up and go and get a drink of water or you go and get a can of soda water or get some potato chips and put the kid in the bed and you come back and you watch it for a little while. Who sits in front of a television set to be intellectually stimulated? I don't anymore because I know that there's not much intellectual stimulation there. But when I do turn it on, I turn it on to be amused, to be entertained, to pass an hour. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what television should be.
Well, in connection with that, what do you think is the future of television itself? Do you think it will be like in an NET, they want to make that tax-supported now, the sets? Or do you think it's like in a fourth network, like an Obermeyer network?
I've heard that the Overmyer network is already so deeply in debt that they're
before it even goes on
that they are almost out of business. Now I don't know if that's true or not. You hear a lot of talk.
Well, pay TV too, for that matter, and which they haven't even started.
Well, pay TV is in a rather funny position because, after all, if they ever score any kind of a success, you know, they tried that out in Los Angeles, and before the people out there killed it on that referendum 2 years ago, the pay TV thing. They tried it, and they had one success. They booked a movie called Dr. No, which was the first James Bond movie. Well, they paid a lot of money for that picture, and they got all the people that were on the cable at that time to tune in. So the next week, the commercial television station went on, and for twice as much money, bought the second James Bond movie out, and that killed the appeal of pay TV so far as that's concerned. Educational TV, I don't know about that. It's been kind of a flop ever since it came on, because people don't want to sit in front of a television set and be educated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Channel 12 here in Philadelphia has got some great programs on, but I rather suspect that the most popular program that they have on right now would be David Susskind, and that is not really an educational program.
Mm-hmm. The training ground today, like, there's no summer stock for people interested in this. You go right into it.
Mm-hmm.
And as for yourself, now, there supposedly is no such thing as an overnight success, but from the start, you seem to have been in all the big networks, more not networks, but in big markets. First of all, where would you think somebody starting the business could start?
At a radio or television station, obviously. Or maybe at a newspaper or an agency, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
see, they
where
tell
do you
people,
start? Do you go out here to Wixahixie in some little two-bit town in a 250-watt radio station? Or do you try and find a job at a station here in Philadelphia or a market comparable in size to Philadelphia? That really all depends on the individual, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Some people come out of college and they are tremendously talented and they are very well equipped to go to work in a major market for a major television station immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of people will always find jobs waiting for them. There are other people who graduate from college. They are very smart, but they aren't quite with it in terms of knowing what this business demands in the way of skills and talents. Those people are going to have to go to the smaller towns and are going to have to learn it where you don't have specialization like you do here in Philadelphia. Here in Philadelphia, if I go out and shoot a piece of news film, I've got to take along a cameraman and a sound man. I've got to come back and have an editor cut the piece of film. I can't lay a hand on it because of unionization.
Yes.
I'm not knocking the unions here because these people have got to have work and it's got to be done in a proper way. But if you go to a smaller market like Savannah, Georgia, or like, even Pittsburgh to some degree, you can do all those things yourself.
Mm-hmm. Just quickly now, where would you like to go from here? You're a host of... in the fourth largest city in the nation, one of the most popular shows, where would you like to go from here?
I would not like to go to New York.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to go back to California.
Oh, you would.
And if I ever get east of Pasadena, or west of Pasadena, California again, I will never come east of it unless you ask me to be on this program.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm Florence Weiss, and my guest tonight has been Mr. Tom Snyder of KYW's Contact. I'll be seeing you in and around next week with a prominent personality.